The girl's entire world had just burst into a satanic circle of fire and blood as she witnessed her closest friends horribly murdered by a ghost named Earl Joe Hendershot and his phantom murder machine, the Kill Car. The girl had thought on her feet quickly, and unlike everyone else, she had run away from her car and not towards it. This bought her a precious few seconds, which was just enough time to save her life. She scurried away from the roar of the engine, the dying cries of her friends, and into the quiet embrace of the trees. The forest in the holler called Crooked Neck, which is just outside of Bedford, West Virginia, is dense and lush and thick, and quite impossible for the kill car, or any car, to follow her, which made her safe, or so she thought. What the girl didn't understand was that this was one of the old forests, extant from before the days of man. Bountiful nature and infinite chaos entwined, filled with old myths and dead legends and vagabond devils that have nowhere else to hide. Had she known what awaited her out in the wilds of the Crooked Neck, she might have chosen death. Instead, she got to spend 5 nights trapped, wandering lost in an old forest. This is the story of Annette Bergman. Her friends call her Bergie. But after hearing this, you'll only remember her as the girl who loved Stephen King. Drinking whiskey in the kitchen and telling scary stories around the fire. Music, monsters, and mayhem. Killers, cannibals, and cults. Fearful fiction and furious fact. Tall tales and terrifying truths. This is A Scary Home Companion. She ran blindly into the tree line. Away from Earl Joe in his horrible kill car, away from the bodies of Shep and Pinsk and Delvin and Scooter, away from the unbelievable reality that she had stumbled into. Because, believe you me, Bergie never thought any of those stories were real. No matter how many of them she heard from so many different people, it was still just make-believe. It had to be. And yet, she signed up for the crew. She needed a crew. She needed to fit in somewhere. And these were the weird guys, the outcasts, the untouchables, the losers, which seemed to fit her perfectly. Plus, there was Christine, the novel by Stephen King. More than anything else, that was what put her on this path. Stephen fucking King.
Bergie.
Bergie grabbed the nearest tree and slid around behind it, sinking down close to the ground. What was that? It wasn't a car. It was a voice. Was Earl Joe out looking for her? Could he do that? She knew she had to keep moving. Staying out here where the trees and the undergrowth was so thick that no four-wheeled vehicle could penetrate it. Which was all well and good, but she still didn't know where she was or where she was going. But that would come later. For now, she just needed distance. As a lifetime resident of the area, Bergie had intimate knowledge of the local landscape. That, plus the stars, should be able to guide her home, once she got far enough away from the Crooked Neck to circle back around. So yeah, Stephen King. Curse his name. Next to her Aunt Susanna and Shep himself, Stephen King was probably the single greatest influence over Burgi's life thus far. She had discovered the author quite young. She was in the checkout line at the Piggly Wiggly. Something caught the eye of this troubled, precocious girl, who at this point had not adopted the nickname Burgi and just went by Annette. She was with her grandmama, Aunt Susanna's mom, when she saw the cover to the novel Cujo on a discount sales rack. It was a very old edition that came out right after the release of the movie, and the book cover showed a white picket fence spattered with blood that spelled the word Cujo. She begged her grandmama to buy her that book, who of course refused because we have a budget, don't we? Then grandmama saw the price tag, and since it was so old and secondhand, the book was only 50 cents. And that 4 bits changed Annette's life forever. The girl had expected the tale of an evil dog, but she got so much more. She learned new curse words and how adults had gross sex and gross revenge sex. She also got terrified by the visions of Frank Dodd, the Castle Rock Strangler, and her heart was absolutely shattered by the ending. At this point, she'd only read children's stories with happy endings. But this shattered her in a good way, a compelling way, a way that said, hey, this writer is maybe as nihilistic and honest as I want to be. She devoured Cujo in 3 days. After that, she was hooked. Of course, she was still 9, and this was still Bedford, so she couldn't exactly just go out and get another Stephen King book. There wasn't a library, and she knew very few people who owned books. Many locals considered it inappropriate for a girl her age to read anything. Nonetheless, horror stories. And those people might have been right, hindsight being what it is. So in the meantime, she reread Cujo. And again, and again. But then...
Burgi.
Whoa. Did she just hear that?
Burgi.
She stopped. Crouching down low again, she looked for lights in the sky, stars to guide her, but it was all blacked out by the thick canopy above. The ground was starting to slope now, and while it wasn't exactly slippery, it wasn't not slippery neither. So she paced herself, dead-ass blind, baby steps, fumbling towards freedom. The wind was still. Everything was quiet. And she couldn't tell if she really just heard what she thought she just heard. Maybe it was best to sit tight for a bit, now that she wasn't in immediate danger of being run down. She could afford to be cautious. So anyways, after a few run-throughs of Cujo, her Aunt Susanna slipped Burgi a little early birthday gift. Anyone asks, they didn't come from me, the woman had told her through a haze of Virginia Slim smoke and a half-swallowed mouthful of moonshine. It was a box, and inside that box were beat-up, dog-eared, paperback Stephen King novels. 9 of them, some in total. For the next 2 months, those books were the sole focus of Berge's life. Night Shift, The Dead Zone, It, Salem's Lot, Firestarter, Carrie, Pet Sematary, Tommyknockers, and of course, Christine. At first blush, Firestarter was far and away her favorite. Berge saw a lot of herself in Charlie McGee. It made her think about what life would be like if she had powers. Then, when she got a couple years older, Berge was more of a Carrie White girl. It was more relatable. By this point, she had picked up a few other King novels on her own, slowly growing a secret collection, which she kept hidden in the crawl space under her room. Aunt Susanna might have been cool about it, but she was the lone standout in the family. Anyone else would try and take him away, and Berge couldn't bear the thought of losing what were her prized possessions. Oh well, that ain't good. Them voices sounded little. Maybe a Children of the Corn type situation? Or was this more of a Tommyknockers ordeal? Didn't matter. The voices were close. They were too close. And they knew her name. So she had to move, and fast, slippery slope be damned. After she had taken only a few steps, Berge reached out and touched a tree to support herself. And she saw her hand. Because there was a light coming from behind her. It was distant, but it was strong. Her first instinct was to whip around and see where the light was coming from. But then she saw the shadows on either side of her.
Berge,
long,
Berge,
thin, Berge, wispy Berge, shadows. Berge, the shadows of Berge, emaciated children, Berge, bellies bloated, heads Berge, drooping on long necks.
Berge,
and they were
Berge,
reaching out towards
Berge,
her shadow.
Berge,
so she didn't dare turn around. She was realizing this might be something akin to the deadlights. And you never want to look at the deadlights. She saw that the shadows of the children were starting to touch her shadow. And she felt brushes of hot wind against her arms in the exact same places. She broke pace and wind sprinted, caution to the wind, deadlights firmly to her back. She pushed off of bent over trees, scrambled through brush, and tried her best to keep her feet under. And that only worked for 100 yards or so. And then the ground fell away. The earth turned to slick red clay. And then she was tumbling, rumbling, falling, rolling down the bank, and crashing to a halt next to an ugly, twisted little stream. The water stank like bile and had a soft yellow coloration to match. She recoiled, pushing away from the edge. "You have to jump the crick," a woman said from the darkness on the other side. She sounded scared, helpless, but she sounded normal. "They can't cross it, so come over here, and they'll leave you be." It was only a few feet across, so Berge scouted the safest jump point and got herself a running start. Berge saw a shape emerge from behind a tree. A short, plump woman with thick-framed glasses that gave her soft face the appearance of an ostrich. Are you okay? The woman asked. Bergy nodded. Thanks, I think so. Are you lost too? No, not like you. I'm dead. My name's Janice. It's a pleasure to meet you. Bergy's eyes adjusted as Janice came a little closer. And then? Holy shit, the teen girl said, stumbling back towards the edge of the creek. Janice had a slightly misshapen head, the back of which appeared to be flattened, cracked open, and caked with long-dried gray matter. And her arms and legs, although seemingly functional, were as janky and contorted as the crooked neck itself. Watch your step, Janice warned. You're Victor Pascal. My name is Janice. Victor Pascal, from Pet Cemetery. He was dead. He was a ghost. But he wasn't an evil one. Please, Jesus Lord, tell me you're not an evil one. Bergy, watch your step. Bergy looked down and saw that she was standing at the very edge of the waterline and that the foul water was starting to eat away at her Chuck Taylors, like acid. But there was something else, too. Little dark shapes just under the surface, nicking at her. She jumped out and kicked off her shoes. One of them flopped into the creek, where it sizzled and smoked as it sank, being chewed on by the little shadow fish. Bergy sat down on the damp earth and hugged her knees. Janice squatted down next to her. No, I'm not an evil one. I'm lost here, same as you, except not the same as you. Bergy nodded, processing it, and then said, How'd you know my name? The Shadow Children were saying it. How did they know my name? They just know things. Well, what are they? Couldn't say for sure. There's a lot out here like that. Bergy scooched a little closer to the water to take a gander at those fish. From what she could make out, they were mostly bones, no flesh or skin that she could see, but they were fearsome hungry. What are they? She asked. Couldn't say that either. Just some hungry fish from somewhere else. I can tell you that they're doing you a favor. If that water runs still, if you can see your reflection clearly, then they can see you too. Who? Your reflection, Janice explained. They can reach right through and pull you into them. Or them into you. Why would they do that? Because there are places worse than here, believe it or not. Bergy backed away. The thing about Victor Pascal was that maybe he was a real ghost, and maybe not. The same thing with Frank Dodd, the Castle Rock Strangler, who killed himself, but then he showed up in a little boy's closet. Was it the ghost of Frank Dodd haunting the town? Or was it a figment? A bad memory that sparked nightmares? And, the most important question, was there a difference between these things? Are you real? She asked Janice. Like, really real? Of course I am. Yeah, you say that, but I fell pretty hard, Berkey said. I might have cracked my noggin worse than I thought. I don't know for sure I'm talking to somebody at all. Who are you, Janice? Name of Janice Murphy. Friends call me Shotgun. Why do they call you that? My glasses. My eyes are terrible, so I can't legally drive. I always have to ride Shotgun. Also, yes, later I did learn how to use a real shotgun, but that was on account of the nickname and not a vice versa. How did you get here, Janice? My girlfriend, Lurleen, and me, we came out for a race. Didn't believe about Earl Joe. And you see the result before you. He done ran me over with that kill car. Crunched me all up like this. Then I woke up, and I'm here, and I'm lost. And I don't know much more than that. I wish to hell I did. Despite her grotesque and gruesome appearance, Janice just seemed so sincere that Berkey swooped in and gave her a soft hug on instinct. She got him, though, Berkey said. Did you know that? What do you mean? Lurleen, she cooked something up. She managed to beat Earl Joe. She lost her foot, but she put him down. At least for a while. What? When did she do this? Oh, I don't know. It was some time back. How long have I been here, Berkey? It's felt like a few weeks, maybe? Oh, no. Oh. Well, I can't say for sure, Janice. And I'm sorry to tell you this, but it's been a few years. Years? The dead girl leaned against the trunk of a sugar maple, clutching at her face. Years? It's been years. After a respectful amount of silence, Berkey said, Miss Janice? I know I'm full of irritating-ass questions that you don't know the answer to, but can I ask you something? Go ahead, but don't call me Miss Janice. Okay, Shotgun. Is there a way I can get out of here? We can try, Janice said, wiping her eyes. Thing is, your way out is different from my way out. I know the trails around here like the back of my hand, so let's walk. Maybe you can see something that I don't. Or I see something that you don't. I don't know. Come on, let's go have a look. They walked. Up a rise and down another. Into a little valley where it was full sun. Dead of noon. Then over another ridge where it was nighttime again. How did you come to be out here? Janice asked. You asked me, but I didn't ask you. Oh, it's mostly on account of Christine. Who's that? Not who, it's the book by Stephen King about the haunted car. Oh, yeah. I remember that movie. Book was better. Or worse, I guess, seeing as how it got me a little obsessed with the kill car. And that's how I wound up lost, chasing after that story. Damn old Earl Joe killed my friends. I was lucky to get out. We'll see about that, Janice said. They found a trail. It bent left, then down, then left again, and culminated at the base of a yard. There was a ramshackle cabin, the roof half caved in, and what appeared to be a screened-in front porch, where someone was watching an old black-and-white TV tuned in to choppy static. "What do you think? Maybe they have a phone," Berkey said. Janice grabbed her from behind and pulled her away. "No, you stay away from there. That's the witch of Crooked Neck. That's old leather stocking. She ain't gonna help you, only hurt you." So they kept walking. It felt like hours had passed. Or was it days? When one trail ended, they would root around to find another, or just hard scrabble their way through the brush and the undergrowth. Night and day seemed fluid out here, depending on their location and what direction they were facing. Of course, it was damned impossible to tell which direction was which anyway, because the sun and the stars kept changing their positions in the sky. And the moss, it grew on any dang old side of a tree. But they kept moving. There was no reason to stand still. Not until Bergy saw the skeleton strapped to a tree trunk. That was worth stopping for. It was old, bleached white and faded yellow, and it was tall, maybe 8 feet high. The slightly twisted skull and the long, slender limb bones had been wrapped in chicken wire to secure it to the tree. Bergy was just about to ask what it was when Janice grabbed her by the shoulder and pulled her away. She was frantic now, moving much faster. "Come on. I know where we are. I know these guys. You don't want to meet these guys. We have to keep going." "Is it more folks like him, old Bonesy over there?" "No. These are the ones that killed him. Come on." A few minutes later, they found a newer trail, heavily trodden with footfall ruts lined with early morning dew. "Seems like a lot of people must come this way," Bergy noted. "Maybe we could find..." "No, they are the ghost killers. They are the Wild Hunt. You don't want to find them, and you sure as shit don't want them to find you." The path split, and they took the road less traveled, only for it to loop back around and end at the bottom of the yard of that same old cabin. "The witch is twisting the trails, making it so they all lead back here. I guess old Leatherstocking really wants to meet you." Janice turned to leave, but Bergy stopped her. "Listen, Janice, I appreciate your help, or what you think is your help, but we don't seem to be getting anywhere. And is this Leatherstocking really any worse than being stuck out here for God knows how long?" "She's a witch. She demands gifts." "I don't have any gifts." "You got more than you think, Bergy. Which means, if you will really listen to this, it means you still have things she can take from you." "I don't understand what that means." Janice brought her face in close. She started to speak, but then they heard the voices. Rough and tumble, deep, baritone, guttural voices. At a distance, but approaching quickly. Janice whispered, "We have to hide. If we run, they will hear us. Don't talk, don't breathe, don't move, Don't look. Just hide. Now. They went to opposite sides of the trail. The bush was awash in slate-gray shadows, fading into deep, rich blacks near the ground. Bergie got down on her belly and wriggled up into a patch of southern loosestrife. She put her face in the dirt as she saw the flicker of fluorescent lights growing nearer. Boots crunched soil and stomped mud. There must have been 8 or 10 or 12 of them, big, burly men, all of whom were dressed in the strangest garb. They looked old-timey, but no two were the same kind of old-timey. Different cultures, different eras, matching with the fact that no two of the men looked quite the same, and none of them spoke the same language. Yet they all seemed to understand each other well enough, because they were joking around as they walked. As they passed by, Bergie risked taking a quick look. The fluorescent light was coming from rectangular glass boxes, a half dozen of them or so, all held overhead on long pikes like lanterns to light the way. The boxes were filled with a glowing, swirling white mist, liquid alabaster mixed with static and swimming with ghostly faces. A twig snapped. Hardly any noise at all. Certainly not audible over the din of the wild hunt. And yet on instinct the party fell silent. They turned to look off the path, towards Janice. The dead girl jumped up to her feet and ran. And with a blood-curdling war call, the men gave chase. Bergie allowed them a few moments lead time before sprinting in the opposite direction. It didn't take long for that trail to loop down and to the left, then across a dry ditch and into the bottom of a yard, just beneath Old Leatherstocking's cabin. All paths brought her here. Bergie held back to give it a little thought. This was reminding her of the choice that the Losers Club made in It. Because although they were being brave, it was only kind of brave. Pennywise was already coming after them. Them fighting back to save their lives was only kind of brave. And the same was true for her now. She didn't feel brave, but she had nowhere else to go. Her clothes were torn, she had no shoes. Everything she had seen so far had been absolutely fucking terrifying. So what other choice did she have but to be kind of brave? Her steps were heavy as she walked up towards the screened-in porch. From this vantage point, she couldn't see anybody in there. Just the flicker of a black-and-white TV. A little closer, she saw the TV wasn't playing anything, just a garbled half-feed. And yet the brightness of it washed out the whole porch. And the shriveled, emaciated old woman sitting in the chair. "No use trying to hide, girl," the witch rasped, grinding out the stub of her Virginia Slim in a coffee cup that was full to overflowing with them. "Ain't no hiding from me. Come on in. We'll have us a little chat." "Ma'am, I'm afraid to come in." "Afraid of a harmless old woman? Don't talk foolish. Come on now." Bergie opened the door and stood on the threshold. The woman appraised her, nodding to herself. I know you ain't brought me no gifts, no tributes. Nothing for old Leatherstocking. No, ma'am, I'm sorry, I don't have anything. That's too bad. Y'all being turned around, lost like you are. You had a gift for me. I could easy point you the way out. You'd be back to town in 10 minutes. So, you sure you ain't got something for me? I don't have anything. Settle on down there, girl. I ain't a hurt you. I might not a help you, but I ain't gonna hurt you. You ain't done no affront to me. Thank you. I just... Bergie slid down the door frame until she was sitting. I'm so tired, but I'm afraid to close my eyes. Well, ain't that a sad state of affairs for such a pretty young thing like you? Say, open them up. Don't start napping just yet, girlie. I got me an idea. You ain't got a gift. There's something you can do for me, and that would count as a proper tribute. You do that, you help me, and I'll help you out of these woods. Now, why don't you come over here and look at me close? This made Bergie very uncomfortable. Why do you want that? Well, it's simple. I got no reflectifying glass here. TV can't shut off, so I can't ever see my face on the screen reflection neither. Nobody gets close enough to me for a proper gander, but right now that's all I want. I ain't seen my own face in years. Come on then. Look me right in the eye so I can see my reflection. Come on then. Although Bergie hated the idea of getting a single inch closer, she got up and went anyway. Push came to shove. She can push and shove this old bag of bones throughout the room without breaking a sweat. So what did she really have to worry about? This wasn't Pennywise. It was just a sad old crazy lady. Right here, then. A little closer. Turn your head, I catch the light off the TV. Oh my. Is that me? Is that what I look like? The old woman squinted and came in so close to Bergie's face. And Bergie kept her eyes wide open, looking up to the ceiling so the witch could see her reflection in the whites. No, don't look up. Look at me. Suddenly the witch smacked her, bending her nose, drawing a little droplet of blood in her nostril, which Leatherstocking licked up quick as you please. Look at me, she repeated. Look at me. Look at me. Bergie was sitting in the chair in front of the black and white TV. And kneeling in front of her, inexplicably, was herself. Bergie, smiling brightly, happier than she'd been in so long. Thank you for this gift. I won't take it lightly, I promise. The teen girl got to her feet and kissed the old woman on her wrinkled forehead. The woman who sat in this chair before me, she wasn't the original Leatherstocking neither. Spent a time learning from a skinwalker, she said. Gave me the secret on her way out the door. That's been 30 years done gone. But that's how long it takes sometimes. I call it the switcheroo. You seem like a good girl, though. I feel right awful about leaving you here like this. So let me do what she did. and I'll tell you the secret. Bergy leaned in next to the witch and whispered that secret into her ear. On her way out the door, she said, "Good luck, Annette Bergman." "Oh, wait, that's my name." Through cataract eyes, she watched her former body walking away. With frail, weak lungs, she screamed out in protest. She pushed herself up out of the chair, but her limbs felt weak and spindly. It was so hard to move. Then the TV spoke to her. She looked and saw that the black and white static was gone, replaced with full color, high def. It was a man looking back at her and speaking so softly and kindly, explaining who she was now and what was required of her. A single tear spilled down her leathery cheek. She lit up a Virginia Slim and started to pay attention. Thank you for listening to another episode of A Scary Home Companion. Check the show out on social media. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Reddit. You can contact us directly at ascaryhomecompanion@gmail.com. I hope you enjoyed this culmination of the West Virginia saga, which has been playing out over the last few episodes and the last few years. If you're missing having heard any of those, go back and find them. And if you'd like to learn about Lurleen's time in Pierre Nerota with Monica, you're going to have to go to the Patreon, where there is a 3-episode arc about her battle with El Horrible. Support the show with Patreon and get these episodes and tons more, plus some games, all kinds of fun extras. It's only a few bucks a month, and there's even a free tier, just so you can keep tabs on everything that you're missing out on. I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome our newest patron to the cult, Natividad. Thank you for backing A Scary Home Companion, and I absolutely love your name. The music this episode was provided by Sergey Cuadrado with Documentary Dark, Dark Ambient Texture, and Scary Forest. Audio Result provided Regeneration, Caution, Time is Running Out, and Dark Premonition. And Lobo Loco provided Burning Sunshine. All of these songs and tens of thousands more are available at freemusicarchive.org. Poor Bergie.